From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Eclipsed by the bombshell testimony of President Donald Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, progressive members of the Democratic Party on Wednesday unveiled a major bill expanding the Medicare program to cover all Americans. Democratic Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington State gathered with hundreds of supporters to announce the introduction of the highly anticipated Medicare for All bill. The legislation has a whopping 107 co-sponsors in the House. Public support for such a proposal has been surging among members of both parties, but politicians and media analysts have continually thrown cold water on efforts to expand Medicare, saying it would cost too much. What are the prospects for Jayapal's bill? My guest is Connie Huynh. She's the Healthcare for All campaign director with People's Action, joining us to try to answer that question. Welcome, Connie.
Hi, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, let's talk about what exactly is in this bill. As far as you can tell, we have had Medicare for All bills in the past. H.R. 676 had been introduced, you know, basically as a matter of course every year by former Representative John Conyers. Is this a new version of that?
Yes, absolutely. It's an improved and expanded version. This time around, when we say Medicare for All, we truly do mean all.
So let's actually see what Pramila Jayapal herself has to say in an interview on Bloomberg Politics the day that she introduced the bill and took it public. She gave an interview and explained on television exactly what this bill would entail.
We have 107 co-sponsors, a really record number of original co-sponsors on this bill, and it is a detailed proposal for how to ensure that every American across the country gets quality health care. And fundamentally, what we're saying is that the marketplace for healthcare right now is broken. As you know very well, and your viewers know, healthcare costs are driving Americans into bankruptcy. Two-thirds of all Americans go bankrupt partly because of medical costs. Healthcare costs are about 18% of GDP right now, which is double what every other major industrialized country in the world has. And that number is only set to go up to unsustainable levels. My plan says everything that stays the same in terms of your providers. We're not nationalizing anything around who provides healthcare. Same doctors, same hospitals. You get to go to the same people that you've always gone to. But instead of paying money out to big insurance companies, and instead of allowing pharmaceutical companies to make hundreds of billions of dollars in profit on pharmaceutical drug pricing, we control those costs and the government pays for everything. So the only thing that changes is what card do you provide? You don't have to deal with five insurance plans. You don't have to buy a Medicare Advantage plan to go onto your Medicare system. And what we have done is taken a very successful Medicare system. We have expanded it to include comprehensive care, so things like dental, vision, mental health, substance abuse. And then we have said, and now we're going to make sure everybody can access those benefits and the government pays for that. So no more private insurance companies taking the money. That's where we get the cost savings, is around administration.
And that is Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington State speaking on Wednesday to Bloomberg Politics, explaining what's in her Medicare for All bill. Connie, let's expand a little bit on her description. What I thought was really interesting was that she says that this isn't going to be like the national health system in Britain. Essentially, providers will remain the same. Doctors will be the same. It's just the middle person, right? The insurance company that would be eliminated. Instead of going through your insurance company, the government pays for it. Is that essentially how the Medicare program for seniors works right now?
Yes, absolutely. So it's the federal government, right, that has the buying power and the paying power for the healthcare for seniors. And so if we expand that, what we're doing is essentially taking corporate greed out of the system, right? So rather than prioritizing corporate profits, we put the power back in the hands of actually people like you and me, Sonali, as voters and taxpayers in this system.
And of course, what's also remarkable, which Jayapal added, is that It includes vision and dental care. I mean, right now, most insurance companies will be sort of separate. You have your health insurance, and if you're lucky, your employer provides you with dental care in a separate plan. And then maybe if you're even luckier, you might get vision care in a separate plan. This includes it all.
This includes all of that and more, right? So it covers prescription drugs, so that whatever prescriptions that your doctor prescribes to you, you can actually access and you don't pay for it, right? It also includes long-term care. And then it also includes in-home care as well. So it's the most comprehensive legislation and most equitable that we have seen.
And mental health care?
Mental health, behavioral health, yes.
So the most people who have insurance, who are lucky enough to have insurance today, have to usually pay some kind of premiums, to sort of add to what their employer might pay, and or they might have deductibles and or co-pays every time they go to see a doctor. They might have to pay $25. Would any of that, if this bill were to pass and become law, would any of that be there?
So if this bill were to pass and to become law, it would make it so simple for all of us, right? It'll make it better by, like, none of that will exist, right? All of these services that we are talking about will be paid for and covered. We don't have to worry about co-pays. We don't have to worry about contributions to our employer-sponsored plans and all of those complicated things. It'll be taken care of.
So, I understand that it also does not interfere with some other existing government health care plans. So, currently, critics of Medicare for All say the government shouldn't be in the business of providing health care, but the government is in the business of providing health care to some Americans. So, we have Medicare for seniors, we have Medicaid for people on dis who are experiencing disabilities or fall below the poverty line. We have the Veterans Affairs Administration for veterans. We have the Indian Affairs Administration for Native Americans, and for citizens of Native American nations. How would this plan fit within that landscape?
Basically, this plan overarches all of that, right? So this plan, again, everything would fold into one payer as the federal government, right, overseeing Medicare.
Of course, the big question that everybody is asking, including many Democrats who are opposed to Medicare for All, is how to pay for it. Why doesn't this bill have much by way of details for how the government pays for it?
Well, because most of the cost savings actually, or sorry, so the way that we actually pay for this is actually through the cost savings. So this bill, right, if become law, would actually save us trillions, I believe $2 trillion over the next 10 years, right? And again, that comes from eliminating the high costs of prescription drugs, so reining in those costs, and then also eliminating administrative costs from insurance companies. So that is one of the main reasons why there's not a lot of detail, is this actually comes out of the corporate and private sector in terms of how we pay for this.
But there would be additional administrative costs in the government, right? The government would have to administer this, so that would cost money.
Right, that would cost money. But again, the bulk of the cost savings will actually come through what we eliminate in terms of waste that we're experiencing right now.
Right now, many employers, not all, but many employers do pay for health insurance for their employees. Would companies divert that money into the government revenue stream in order to help pay for such a bill? I mean, for example, would basically corporations and individuals be taxed to help pay for this? So the money that they would be paying for health insurance, both, corporations and people, would instead be a tax that would go into a pot for Medicare for All?
So I think the biggest diversion here is for us to really think about right now in our system, employers are paying into, if you are lucky to have employer-sponsored insurance, that money comes from your paycheck, right? So that is money that essentially your employer could pay to you.
I see.
What we would like to see as the biggest diversion is that that money that your employer is putting into your healthcare benefits actually goes back into your paycheck, right, in terms of wages. So whether it's, you know, paying into the federal system or paying into your paycheck, you are getting that money back from your employer.
Now, we already are taxed on Social Security and Medicare. Every American who earns a paycheck, you know, if it's an above the table job, you get these deductions. And so essentially, you know, would that deduction remain the same, or are those details still ready to be worked out, that you would have a sort of Medicare deduction? Maybe it would be called something else. Maybe it would get slightly bigger because you're not just putting away money for when you turn 65, but also putting money towards current healthcare.
I guess we will see.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the devil is in the details.
And of course, the insurance industry would essentially not really need to exist anymore, right? This is one of the other big, huge oppositions to this particular bill. Is it that the bill would eliminate the insurance industry, or the insurance industry could coexist for people who want sort of, you know, gold or platinum plans, and maybe would be forced to downsize on its own?
Well, so the insurance industry would not exist as it exists today. I don't know if there's another role for the insurance industry to play, but in order for this to work, right, we really need to take that control out of insurance corporations who are making decisions right now about who gets healthcare, how much healthcare you get, and how much you actually pay on top of your insurance premiums and all of those other things into the system. And so those decisions would, again, be out of the hands of insurance corporations, back in the hands of taxpayers and voters like you and me, who are voting on issues and moving our representatives, right, in our government, right, to make those decisions. And so, and then also another really important piece, because I believe that there is some conversation about, is there a system that would survive with insurance companies? Again, no, because basically what would end up happening is if people who are wealthier, who are able to access private insurance, they would flock to that system, and then our public Medicare system, right, would be filled with the folks who have been left out of healthcare access for, you know, decades, right? In my own family, you know, it's been decades. So for folks who have been left out of that healthcare system, that we would continue to use the public system, and that there would be this gets into sort of like how, you know, make the healthcare system equitable, but basically there would be unequal weight in terms of, you'd have sicker people in the public healthcare system and then healthier and wealthier people in the private system, which just doesn't work.
I see.
Right? And so we need everybody to be in the public system, receiving equitable, high quality care, where everybody can have access to the treatment that they need. And that is what we need in order for this to work.
Some other criticisms include the fact that hospitals would suffer tremendously because they just wouldn't be able to get as much reimbursement for their costs. Currently, there's a claim that private health insurance companies essentially subsidize Medicare patients, because the reimbursement from the government for services offered through Medicare is much smaller than the reimbursement from private health insurance companies for those same services. So the argument is, if we go to a completely public system, that hospitals wouldn't be able to cope with the costs.
That is a really interesting claim, because Medicare is an even larger system in terms of providers that participate in it than Medicaid, right? And so, so I'm not an expert in terms of like how much doctors and hospitals are being paid, but so again, I think that that's a really interesting claim. I think that again, what we are seeing is a reaction from private corporations to the potential reworking of a system that actually works for people in the United States and people who need healthcare rather than corporate interests.
Let's talk about the prospects for this bill. One might be tempted to assume that the Democrats are going to pass it in the House because they control the House, but it would die in the Senate. However, there is infighting within the Democratic Party on such a bill, even though this bill that Pramila Jayapal introduced has 107 co-sponsors, and it has become a sort of litmus test for presidential contenders because they realize how popular it is. We still see strong opposition from some of the party's leaders, such as from, of course, Nancy Pelosi. How do Democratic Party leaders, especially establishment leaders, view the Medicare for All bill? Pelosi has not come out swinging in support of it.
Right. And we all know that and we see it. So we're watching you, Nancy. But I won't pretend to say that I know what she thinks, right? But I do think that it speaks to how progressive this legislation actually is, right? And that there are, again, there is unprecedented support. What you are saying in terms of, you know, how we got to that support is actually because there is a grassroots movement behind this, right? People in the communities are talking about a bill before it has even been introduced. And that is significant in this moment. And I think that the reaction and what we're seeing from, Democratic leadership is sort of like, this has all happened very fast. It is the most progressive and comprehensive legislation we've seen, a proposal that we've seen so far on this. And so I think folks are still deciding sort of like how they, what's their place and what's their position on this. And so hopefully what we'll see is people will start to feel the pressure as we continue to build, right, at the grassroots level to come on board with this. Because, you know, at the end of the day, this is where we need to be. And for folks that are involved in this, and as our movement continues to grow, we are going to fight for our right, our human right, for access to healthcare. And we're not going to stop until we make it a reality.
If this bill were to pass the House, say Jayapal could, you know, get enough members of the Democratic Party on board, maybe even a few Republicans, what is the next step in the Senate? Would a new version of this bill be introduced into the Senate? Or do you think that there's already a bill such as, say, the Sanders bill in the Senate that could then move ahead? Or is it too early to ask that question?
It probably is too early to ask that question, yeah.
And the issue of this particular proposal being a moral one, let's turn to that now, because again, there's a lot of, everyone's bringing up, what about the cost? There was a new Wall Street Journal article just on Friday saying that there's a poll showing that support among the public for such a bill drops when you talk about how much it's going to cost. So clearly the sort of propaganda effect of all of the headlines about, well, how do we pay for it, is trickling down to the public and causing people to be a little bit worried. And so, you know, does this need to be reframed as a moral issue? Set aside the money for it. This is, you know, no matter where we get it from, we have to get it because this is a moral issue.
Yeah, so I think that is really interesting. That's a really interesting question. I think that really what's happening in terms of the propaganda or the opposition on this, right, they're framing this as like, what about the cost? When again, what we're seeing, what the estimate is that we will save trillions of dollars and save millions of lives through this, right? And so it's really like, what are we calculating as costs? Are we calculating human lives as part of this cost? Because those are invaluable, right? Number one. And I think that the real question that we're seeing from Wall Street and corporations is, what about their profits, right? And so that's really what they're thinking about. And I think that when we talk about costs, again, we really need to think about what are the costs that we're actually talking about? Are we talking about how much people are actually paying into their employer-sponsored coverage? Are we talking about how much their employers are actually paying into that coverage? Are we talking about how much people are coming out of pocket for their prescriptions, for their co-pays, for all of their services, their equipment? Are we talking about people, you know, losing family members, loved ones? Are we talking about, you know, how much people are suffering and making sacrifices every day in their life because of they're dealing with issues that are not being covered by their insurance coverage? And then again, looking at the savings that we will realize over time, right? Let's really talk about those costs. So I don't necessarily want to walk away from a discussion about the costs of this, but we really need to expand what we're calculating as costs. And at the end of the day, right? Like, you know, I believe that there is a strong case that we are actually saving, and that this makes a lot of sense in terms of the cost of us continuing down the same path of our current system outweighs the cost or the benefit, right, of what we'll see under a Medicare for All system being proposed by Representative Jayapal right now.
Right. I mean, one of the big cost savings by transferring to a government system is there's no need to worry about the profits of a private industry. The profits of a private industry are out of the picture, and right there you have cost savings.
Absolutely. Most of our expenses right now go to extremely ridiculous costs on prescription drug prices, right? So everybody knows right now that prescription drugs are just ridiculous and in terms of cost. So that's one big factor. And then, as you just mentioned, Sonali, you know, in terms of like what we're paying into insurance companies, the reason why, I mean, right now, if we want to talk about costs, let's talk about how much our insurance is going to cost over the next 10 years if insurance corporations continue to act the way they've been acting.
Right, right. And our current system just simply does not cover everybody. Finally, Connie, this is a personal issue to you. I mean, we all have healthcare needs, but those of us who've had to really face the limits of our current system know how important it is to each and every one of us. Can you share with us your personal story of why this is such an important issue to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to, Sonali. This is deeply personal to me. I grew up in a family without access to health insurance, and that was because my parents were small business owners. So we didn't qualify for Medicaid, but they didn't make enough to actually afford a reasonable health insurance plan. So we just made do with what we could as, you know, I was growing up. So it was me and my brother. Both he and I didn't have access to healthcare until we were in our, you know, 20s to 30s, when we got it through employer-sponsored insurance programs. And then my parents actually did not have access to healthcare until they were Medicare age, right? So they were 65. And I think that it is just...
They didn't have any health insurance till they were 65?
That is correct.
Wow.
On the front end for me and my brother, it's like, it's absolutely immoral for children to be expected to grow up without access to health insurance. We all know that in order to even go to school, you have to have vaccinations, you have to have physicals, and you get sick all of the time. I remember getting the flu, you know, I remember having chicken pox, all of these things. And without access to healthcare, you know, my parents had to make really difficult decisions about what they were going to prioritize. And sometimes that meant food, clothing, school supplies, right, would be at risk, their own health. For my parents, right, like, how can we expect people to survive until the age of 65 before they actually get health care, right?
Right. And, you know, it's interesting when if you start to talk to the critics of Medicare for All now about Medicare, if you say, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't, if we shouldn't pay for Medicare for All, why are we even paying for Medicare? All of a sudden, you'll see them start to defend Medicare, Medicaid, the VA. But somehow the line gets drawn at age 65, or, you know, there's lines that are drawn and it's not clear. Those lines can seem arbitrary, especially if you happen to need healthcare before the age of 65.
Absolutely. They're very arbitrary. My mother, just had a heart attack over the holidays
Oh, I'm
and had
sorry.
this happen. Well, I mean, she's doing fine now, so I appreciate that. But had this happen, 5 or 6 years ago, we would have been stuck with a bill that, is $500,000 for her 10-day care over the situation. Yeah.
Well, Connie, thank you so much for joining us today. Is peoplesaction.org the best website?
Yes, that is the best website. And you can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter as well.
And we'll link to that from our website. Thanks so much, Connie.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Connie Nguyen, a Healthcare for All campaign director with People's Action. We've been discussing the new Medicare for All bill just introduced into the House by Representative Pramila Jayapal. It has a total of 107 co-sponsors. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.